Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you are listening. This is not Frank Duncan today. This is Bob Zimmerman, and we got Zach McLeod and Will Stevens with us for another episode of Backfield Banter.
All right, Will, you just left last week. How's Florida? Can you kind of give the people like a little overview of what it's like in spring training, minor league camp, and how the travel was?
It's a hell of a lot warmer than Kansas City. Drove down, left in snow, and now it's 80 degrees here today, and it's been raining for the last 2 hours. But no, it's good. I mean, getting back into the swing of things, kind of getting back into a routine, which is nice. I love my off-season routine, but now is when the games start and the focus shifts a little bit from, you know, the kind of what you guys talk about, the indoor cat stuff, to the outdoor cat stuff. Just performing. Went to the facility today for optional stuff. Was going to throw, but ended up getting thrown into a bullpen today after three straight days of like 30 hours of travel and not throwing. Do all of the office work. And then the first day of camp's Thursday.
And you're living with my boy Owen Wild again, right?
I am, yep. We got an Airbnb down here. Super nice place.
Yeah. How's he doing?
He's good. He had a little setback this off season. I know he wanted to come and train with Bob for a couple weeks before we were going to come here, so he's going to take a stop in Kansas City and see you too, Zach. But yeah. With the injury, he ended up just having to rehab. But no, he's good. I think he starts his bullpens, I think tomorrow is his second bullpen. And then he'll get into lives later this month. But yep, just grinding.
We'll have to have him on and we can talk shop a little bit with him. I've been in communication with him since I coached him down in Alaska in that collegiate league a few years ago. But man, he had an electric year last year. I know you guys have kind of roomed together, so it's kind of cool seeing you guys become friends after coaching both of you at different times in your life. So you guys are both meatheads, so I figured you would get along pretty well.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Well, today, I think what we're really going to talk about is we've kind of went over a little bit of Bob's career and kind of like how he came into coaching and starting Premier, but we haven't really gone in depth into his career, and so we thought it'd be a good day to kind of talk about that. So Bob, why don't you start off and just tell us about where you grew up, where you went to high school, and kind of your baseball experience as a kid.
Yeah, so I grew up in St. Louis, went to high school at DeSmet. Jesuit high school, all guy high school. Very competitive on the sports realm. Played multiple sports in high school. The baseball team was actually very good. We, I think, won state one of the years on varsity, took second in another, and third in the other. So we had a good squad, had a couple guys drafted off the team. And yeah, and then my youth baseball, I guess, has been a little bit different than some of these other guys we talked to because, you know, the crazy travel baseball wasn't really around yet. So it was more like you played with your neighborhood buddies and you played in a league, and at the end of the league season, you had an end-of-year tournament. So everything was all more local. It was more, like, demographic-oriented, like you're playing against other kids' neighborhoods. And honestly, it was probably, like, a lot more prideful and, like,
yeah,
you're whipping some of your buddies that you knew that were from different neighborhoods. Neighborhoods that were also really good. But yeah, so we did a couple out-of-town tournaments, maybe like one a year, but you know, we weren't going tournament to tournament every weekend. I think we played that end of the year like league tournament, and then we did like one out-of-town tournament, and that was about it. And then, you know, once summer ended, would usually end like right after the 4th of July, and would go, me personally, into soccer season, a bunch of the other guys into football, and then into basketball, and then wouldn't start baseball back up until basketball ended in March.
Okay. So you were baseball, soccer, basketball,
yeah,
is that what you're saying?
I was okay. Baseball, soccer. My dad didn't want me to get any head injuries, which I'm very, very thankful for. Yeah. At this point in my life, I remember in when I was younger and in high school, I was being upset. Like, why can't I play football? All my good buddies are playing football. And that was always his thing. Like, you can't play the other sports if you're hurt. And not that you can't get hurt in other sports, but he's like, they're trying to hurt you on every single play.
Yeah. And my dad played college football, and he was, I don't want to say, like, he didn't encourage us, but he didn't say we couldn't. And so when me and my brother stopped playing after sophomore year, he broke his ankle. And then after my freshman year, I was like, I'm just not going to be awesome at this. Like, I think our school was smaller, so I played on the freshman team, and I got called up to play JV a couple times, and I just was not nearly good enough. I was like, you know what? I think fall baseball sounds a little better. But if you had to power rank your sports, like, obviously baseball was your best.
Yeah.
So what about after that?
Basketball was my favorite. baseball I just happened to be the best at. And then soccer, I mean, honestly, like, I enjoyed it, but probably used it for more conditioning for the others than anything else.
Okay. Well, we always shoot around in the morning with the pro guys and have horse. I just am confused why you haven't came over and kind of showed off.
I don't like embarrassing people. So I'm pretty humble, and that's what would happen if I'd go over there.
No, I get that. I get that. So you're a three-sport athlete at your high school. Did you have any other colleges reach out to the other sports, or were you pretty focused?
Yeah. No, so I had a couple offers in basketball, smaller schools. Northwest Missouri, maybe. Okay. At the time, it was somewhere up by St. Joe I got an offer from, which at that time I had no idea where that even was. But yeah, but I had some bigger offers for baseball. And I also got drafted out of high school in baseball, so didn't sign, but thought baseball was much better avenue.
Yeah, and I saw that just pulling up your stats, like you were drafted in the 14th round out of high school. And it was funny because we had this conversation yesterday. I was telling Bob about, like, a guy that I know in a front office was saying basically like 80% of high school picks don't improve their draft stock from what they get drafted in high school to go to college. And then typically it doesn't get better, but you were a guy that did. So you went from the 14th round to the 4th round. And so maybe you can kind of talk about that journey. Like, you went to Missouri State. What were some of the other schools that were
considered? The other schools that were recruiting me was Missouri State, Indiana State, Illinois, Kentucky, all pretty, like, regional schools. You know, I talked to some other schools, but nothing very serious at that point. And, you know, at that point, like, you had to go on the visit. It wasn't today where people are committing on, you know, the first phone call.
You didn't have Twitter. You weren't getting recruited off Twitter back then.
So, you know, we went. We took our 5 visits, Memphis, Mo State, and Kentucky. Yeah. Took the visits, and I ended up choosing Missouri State. Number one, close to my parents, come see me. Wanted them to be able to get down and watch whenever we were playing. And then number two, I had grown up with a couple of the guys on the team down there. One being Ryan Howard, who had a really good career, but we grew up.
For kids that don't know who Ryan Howard is, go Google him. He was an absolute dude in the big leagues for a very long time.
He was a monster, yeah. Ryan was down there, and I knew that, and I knew how good he was. And then just looking at the team, I'm like, man, that team's pretty good. And so I was like, it's a place I got a chance to go and play right away. And so I chose Mo State, Southwest Missouri State at the time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot they changed it. You know? So how important was the playing time to you as a freshman? Because I think a lot of times culture right now, especially with social media, it's more of like a, you know, as the kids say, it's like a clout thing. Like, right, you could have committed to Kentucky because it would have looked cooler.
Yeah, cool SEC.
Cool SEC, big school, Power 5 at the time. Now it's, what, Power 4?
Yeah.
So why, I know you said easier for your parents, you knew some guys. Was some of it like the pitch by the coaches, like, hey, you're probably going to come in and throw right away, or was that not really a big...
Yeah, I mean, it was, we're recruiting 4 pitchers in this class. I remember them, like, hammering on that. Like,
yeah.
You're one of the 4 we're trying to get. We got 4 spots. That's all we're doing. And, I mean, even to this day, like, Missouri State doesn't really over-recruit at all, and they never really have. And it's, you know, a blessing and a curse for them. The guys that go there usually get playing time, but also they miss out on some guys because they just can't overload their rosters. But yeah, for me, I would have gone insane if I didn't play as a freshman. Like, I couldn't imagine sitting and not playing. So playing time was very important to me. I would have rather gone to, you know, the worst JUCO in the country and played than gone to Vanderbilt and not played.
Yeah, and there was a kid that I coached 1 year that he was talking about. I won't say too much, but he gave too many details, but he was saying, like, playing time was the number one thing, and he committed to a big Power 5 school. And I remember telling him, he's like, hey, what do you think? And I was like, I think I understand this is your dream school, but it's a preferred walk-on spot. Like, the odds of you traveling are low, and then playing time is, like, actually your number one thing. Like, this does not make sense. And obviously he went, which, if I'm 19, 20, because he's a JUCO guy, like, I would have probably done the same thing, because you're like, oh, it's here, like, he was from that state and all this stuff. But, you know, he ends up transferring down to a Division II school, and he's put up amazing numbers there, because he's like, you know, I want to play pro ball at some point, so playing time is really important to me. He was like, you know, whether it's drafted, getting signed, playing independently, you know, overseas, whatever. And I just said, well, then playing time is the most important, because you're not going to get signed on a Power 5 roster if you get zero at-bats. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And so I think that, like, if you're fine playing at a big school and you're just like, hey, like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's fine. But if you really want to play, like, then your decisions have to kind of, like, make that.
Right.
You know, which it sounds like you did. You're like, hey, I know these people. I'm going to get to play. So that sounds great. But, yeah, so at Missouri State, how you said your guys' team was pretty good. Like, did you guys go to a regional? Like, I don't know much about that time.
So my freshman year, we was actually probably our best team. And we got snubbed from regional. I think we were, like, 40 and 16 or something, or maybe right under that. But the team was really good. We had Brad Ziegler, who played in the big leagues, Ryan Howard.
So you had a big league catcher and an all-star first baseman in the big leagues?
And, I mean, and then with the other guys, John Reinecker was a first-rounder, was our Friday night guy, lefty, was an absolute beast. Our team was legit that year, and we thought we were going to make a regional, and we got snubbed. And then our sophomore year, we were even better record-wise. I don't think the team was as good, but record-wise, we were better. Got an at-large bid to the Lincoln Regional. Went up there, won two games, and then got beat by Nebraska twice to lose the regional there. And then our junior year, we actually didn't think we were going to get in. We had an okay year. Really talented team. Didn't think we were going to get into a regional. We actually all turned in our uniforms. We had turned in our equipment, turned in our uniforms. People started driving home. Like, the first 2 years, we watched the selection show as a team.
Yeah.
So even though we got snubbed the first year, like, we were there as a team, like, it sucks, we got to go do our thing. Then second year we got in, it was awesome. Third year we were, like, so sure we weren't getting in. Like, everybody was going to do their own thing, like, guys were going home. There was a group, about six of us, who were actually watching it at the house I was renting at the time. And they called our name, and we all looked at each other, and we're like, is this, like, a replay from last year? Like, we aren't getting in. And then they started talking more about us, and like, I'm like, holy shit, we're in.
We got to go,
like,
back.
Yeah, and so we started all calling our buddies, and we're like, hey, turn around. Like, and information wasn't as prevalent as then.
Yeah.
So, like, they're like, you're messing with me. There's no way. And we're like, dude, I swear, turn around. Like, we had to go back, set a time to pick up our uniforms from the equipment room. So it was really crazy. And then that year we ended up going to the Nebraska Regional again, kind of making our way through that, beating Nebraska in the championship there. And then we went to Ohio State for the Super Regional and swept them in the Super Regional.
No big deal. And then
went to the College World Series.
Hey.
And, ran into a Rice team that was ranked number one. And
dude,
that,
those Rice teams were awesome.
Gosh, they were so good. And their arms were crazy. They had Jeff Niemann. I don't know if you remember that name. Played for a little bit. He threw against us. He was like 6'9", monster, throwing like 5'5".
They were like, they went to a couple World Series in a row. And so I remember those because I was probably in middle school, like 21, 22. So I'm like 11, 12, somewhere in there. Just watching those teams. But I was looking at your guys' team numbers. You won 35 games and 43 of them 40. So you guys were super successful. And a lot of people might know Sean Markham. I think you mentioned him. Did not realize he two-weighed.
Yeah. Oh, so, he was our starting shortstop, yeah.
So it looks like he kind of raked, too. So was he?
Yeah,
he was a freak.
he dropped bombs, man. And he knew he was going to go pitch at the next level, and so, like, that was his theory. Like, I'm going to drop bombs here, and so he swung for the fences, and he did. And he was a very good defensive shortstop. And a very good pitcher, and pitched in the big leagues for a long time.
He had three big league pitchers. Yourself, and I'm sure a couple other guys probably played some pro ball as well on that team, and then Sean Markham. Is Tony Piazza related to Mike Piazza?
He is not, but he was our catcher, and he was a beast.
He had 302 with 15 bombs and 12 doubles, so he was kind of a guy.
And that, like, dude, our field, like, the 15 bombs, the field we played at was a very big field. It was, like, 420 to center, and it had a double wall the whole way around. So it had a 20-foot wall completely around. So home runs were hard to come by. And he still had 15, so that kind of speaks to his his ability to hit the ball. And I remember at the Super Regional, I wish I could pull some video and clip a home run that he hit there. We were down at the time, and he just hits this monster 3-run homer to give us a lead and seal it. And it was impressive.
Which I was looking at, I clicked on Ryan Howard's name since you played with him 1 year. He hit 19 1 year and then 13 another. Looks for some reason he didn't have a sophomore year. I don't know what happened there. Maybe got hurt. But it's like, okay, 19 and 13, like that's a lot of home runs. But you would think it would have been more because, I mean, Ryan Howard hit 58 in big league. And he was like the four-hole hitter on a World Series championship team. Which those Phillies teams were, like just growing up watching baseball, those teams with like Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Shane Victorino and Jason Worth, like that was like a very, I don't know, just big moment in my baseball life. So I remember those teams like very, very clearly. So I had no idea that he played at Missouri State. So that's super cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, you guys have a super successful career at Missouri State, team-wise and individually. And then we mentioned earlier you get drafted in the fourth round by the Angels. So can you kind of take us through your draft process? Obviously, it's a mid-major school. So playing in all those big games, having the team success, going to the regional, super regional, World Series, do you feel like that really helped your draft stock, being able to show like, hey, I'm getting outs with all these big schools as well? Or do you think that didn't matter as much?
You know, maybe. I'm not too sure. I think at that time, like, they probably had all the reports in, and it was what it was. I played for Team USA in the summer, like my freshman and sophomore year, and I think playing for Team USA probably had more to do with my draft stock than any of that. And I was a reliever my first 2 years, and then I ended up starting my third year. And honestly, like, it was probably the one instance where it probably hurt my draft stock, because it my draft year, like Hudson Street was a first rounder, Chad Cordero was a first rounder, David Ardsma the year before was a first rounder. I mean, there were probably like 10 college relievers drafted in the first round at that time. Well, now it's
which
like,
is very weird.
It's crazy weird. And so, like, you know, at the time, they're like, you know, you need to start to improve your draft stock. And I was like, okay. Yeah, whatever you guys think's best. And I loved it. Like, I closed, I'd get all amped up, come sprinting out of the pen like a psychopath, wearing eye black. It was, you know, all Batman down my face.
Which Will, I think Will has a picture of that, so maybe we can, Will, you should toss that on our social media.
I was nuts, basically. Like, and I'd go in and I tried to throw the shit out of the ball. And
Which, as a reliever, you should.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I didn't throw off-speed pitches. I just threw fastballs. And, like, they knew it was coming, and I was throwing it, and I was throwing it in the zone.
Yeah.
And they weren't hitting it.
Yeah.
And so, like, because of, like, the shorter stints and getting all amped up, like, my stuff played up. So, like, my velos were always higher. And then that third year, I went to a starter, and so, like, all the velos came down. Like, the not having secondary pitches got exposed.
Well, and also when you're a reliever, and I think this is one thing that I really – like when I was coaching in college that you kind of realize, like, some guys do really well the pin because if, let's say, they're down by two and Bob Zimmerman comes in, they have to swing. Like, they have to create something the last two innings. Whereas you're a starter, you got 9 innings and guys can be more patient, there's less pressure, you know, all that stuff. And then all of a sudden you get a guy, you know, coming in 8th inning, you're down by two, like, you kind of have to swing your way out of it. And so it will help guys at times where it's like, especially if you don't locate as well. Will, I did that with you when you're in high school, just heads up. I always loved having you out of the pen when we're up by like 3, because it was like, all right, here we go, they have to swing. And we'll talk later in your career, like, it looks like you had a lot of success later in your career as a starter.
Yeah. So, well, part of that too, like, when I say, like, I didn't throw other pitches, like, I didn't throw other pitches. Like, it was fastball, here it goes. Like, and then they moved me to a starter, and it would be like, I'd go 100 pitches in a game and maybe try to spin 2 sliders. And
that's wild.
Brutal. And so I'm doing this, just throwing all fastballs.
Did you throw a changeup?
I didn't really start throwing my change. So I threw this, like, split thing that was just awful. And, like, my coaches there knew it was awful, but they were like, yeah, go ahead. And it's, like, it's at least slower. But they're like, we're never going to call it. But yeah, keep throwing her.
Yeah.
And then so I got to pro ball and like, they're like, yeah, what do you throw? And I was like, fastball and a split. And like, first coach watched me throw my first split. And he's like, yeah, don't throw a split anymore. Let's work on change up. But yeah, so I'm going out starting just throwing heaters. And like, tell you what, like it does give you perspective on like how to use the heater, how to pitch, how to move it around, how to do things to hitters when you got to use it.
Yeah.
But so then anyway, like as my career progressed, like my first year in pro ball, they had me start. I was kind of reluctant to do it. I was like, I don't really like starting. They're like, well, you're a higher pick. We need you to start. Like we drafted you as a two start. And I was like, all right, whatever you say. And same kind of thing occurred. And they're like, you know, hammer each game. You got to throw more breaking balls. You got to throw more changeups. And I was like, that's all right. And I think I did okay that year. Probably had like a 4.5 or something.
Yeah, 4.5, 48 innings pitch. So honestly, yeah, like
probably didn't walk anybody. Honestly, maybe had like 5.
8. That's pretty impressive. 8 walks.
So yeah, but I mean, I could throw my fastball in the zone. And that's what I was doing. And then my next year, I was, you know, went into spring and I was like, hey guys, like I really feel a lot more comfortable relieving. Can you let me try it? And so they did in spring. They're like, all right, go ahead and relieve. So they put me in the back end of the game, threw one inning, and they're like, oh yeah, all your velo numbers are up 5 miles per hour. Let's have you relieve this year. And so I went out and relieved that year and had a very, very successful year.
Yeah,
relieving
2.26, 24 saves, like 82 Ks and 6-7 innings. I mean, that's electric.
Yeah, probably still didn't walk. I can't remember.
You walked 21 guys.
Okay, so walks went up a little bit.
Yeah, but like when you're...
But I think I was just trying to punch you out.
Yeah.
Once again, just throwing all fastballs.
Well, I mean, you get the green light when you're a reliever to kind of just go be nasty. And so, like, the walks aren't as big of a deal because you know they're not going to get as many hits. Whereas if you're starting, it's like, if I walk this guy, they're going to see me a couple more times and then I get a hit. Like, it's just different. It's a lot different.
Yeah, for sure. But so, yeah, so relieved, had a really good year. After that year, and I know I've alluded to this before, they took me to Instructs and they're like, yeah, we need you to change what you're doing. The reason you don't have a good breaking ball is because how you break your arms swing. I was like, okay.
What was your arm swing and like what was the adjustment, I guess, they wanted you to make?
I mean, like my timing was really good. Like I was always on time, like never late. Like once again, like my fastball command was very good. They're like, well, you know, you need to, like I was a big long arm swing, but I pulled back up and like got on time and it was repeatable. And they're like, we need you to take like the swing part off it and just go straight up. And so they started having me work on this just, like, straight-up thing. And I was like, this doesn't feel good. Like, I don't want to do this. You know, why are we doing this? And they're like, do you want to pitch in big leagues or not? Like, yeah, we're pitching big leagues. So it was just kind of rough. And
which is, like, the worst question to ask is, like, what if you say no? They're like, oh, you don't want to pitch in the big leagues? Like, well, no, I just don't want to do this. Right. And so it's like it's a lose-lose question.
Yes, correct. So. But, you know, they hit me with that a lot. And but then I started developing hitches, like started throwing like 10 miles per hour slower. And so like back then we didn't have the velo report. So like there would be guys and guns on the stands. They would fill out the reports, but you wouldn't look at them. If you asked to see them, like, I mean, you would be pretty rare. Like you'd be kicked out of the locker room basically, like by the coaching staff, by the other players. Like, give a fuck about your velo, like, keep pitching, keep getting out. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of merit to that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, you need to know things.
Yeah.
And it can be an indicator of injury. It can be an indicator of, like,
well, even if you're like, man, I felt kind of bad, but I don't know what your velos were back then. How hard were you throwing?
So, like, when I was relieving, it would be upper nines. Like,
okay,
I've,
yeah.
Like,
so it's like,
100
I got a bad... I felt bad, but it's like, well, I was still, like, 94, 96, so maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought. Or as if you're like, man, I felt terrible. And like, yeah, you're 90 and 92. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah. But So like I go this whole year, don't know the velos. They make the changes in instructs. I go out the next year. I'm like, I can feel the hitches. I'm like, man, I feel like a weirdo every time I throw a baseball. Still competed. Still like put up pretty good numbers.
That was your high A year?
Yeah, high A.
Yeah, you had a good year. I mean, 332, 59 innings, 62 Ks. So, like, it was good. But you can kind of, like, talk more about that. It was probably, like, more mental than anything, I'm sure. Where it was like,
some of it was, but then some of it, too, was the stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have the stuff. Like, one thing I did have, my breaking ball got better. Like, I was throwing probably 40% breaking balls versus 0%. And so, like, it was better. And, like, my swings and misses that year probably wore on breaking balls. Like, I felt like every time I threw a fastball, I'm like, oh, God, it's getting barreled or getting hit. And I'm like, what's happened? And then so I go into the next spring, and our pitching coordinator, my year I was good before they started changing me, got a big league job with the Rays. And so he left, and then the new pitching coordinator was a guy that tried to change. And then so the following year, they hired the old pitching coordinator back from the Rays to the big league pitching coach for the Angels. And so I get down to spring training, and he sees me on my first day of throwing, and he's like, oh, what's up? You know, how'd it go? Like, what you been doing? And so I started just going through it. And I was like, you know, like, or sorry, it wasn't the first day. First day, we just shot the shit. And then it was like, you know, a weekend, like, I'm playing in games. I'm like, I'm just getting crushed. And I'm like, man, these guys are way better. Like, these hitters are getting way better. And
because there's a jump. You're talking about, like, basically your double A season.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about this on the past podcast before. Like, A to double A is it's a big jump. Age, number one, experience. Like, the talent, guys are talented in pro ball no matter what. But a lot of it's, like, instead of facing 19-year-olds, you're facing, like, 24-year-olds that have an idea of what's going on in the box. Same with the pitchers. The pitchers have an idea of what's going on as well.
So. Yeah, and so I'm just like, man. And so I see him again after a couple outings, and he's like, dude, what are you doing? And I'm like, pitching, why? And he's like, oh, my God. He's like, you look so different. And I'm like, yeah, they, you know, tried to change me up. And he's like, why'd you change stuff up? And I'm like, well, they told me to. And he's like, well, what you were doing was super successful, like, what?
Yeah.
And he was dumbfounded, and then I was like, well, gosh, now I'm an idiot for, you know, not. But he's like, all right, I'm gonna go pull up your reports from last year. And he's like, shit, he's like, Zim, didn't you think you're pitching, you know, averaging 97 the year before, and you were 82 to 86 last year? Did you think that's a problem? And I'm like, dude, I didn't know, like, any of that. I didn't know that's what I was on. I thought the hitters were getting better. And he's like, yeah, this is a big problem. And I'm like, well, yeah, shit, it is a big problem. And so, I mean, they tried to work with me on some stuff to get out of it. Couldn't really. And then after that year, they released me and then signed on with the Yankees. And then won't go into a ton of detail on all of these, because then I bounced around, like, Yankees,
Colorado, Dodgers, St. Louis, back to the Dodgers. So,
And then had a spring training with the Blue Jays after that. Cut out of spring training. So it was it was a wild ride. Yeah, and like the year I had a really good year. I was at big league camp, and like looking back on it, I was probably, it's so weird to say, but I was probably honestly close. I never got sent out. I was up the entire big league camp, went to the freeway series, which the Dodgers and Angels do exhibition games in the actual big league parks at the end of the year. And so they had the 25-man roster and then me. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I was the only one that stayed up all camp that didn't break with the team. So it was kind of crazy. So, like, maybe, like, I was close at that point.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah,
like, they're like, yeah, he needs to develop more, and then go and just freaking derailed. But it was what it was, and then played some years in indie ball. And then, you know.
Do you feel like you ever got back to who you were before all those mechanical changes?
No. So, I mean, the closest I got, one of the coaches at Southwest Missouri State, well, so Paul Evans and Jamie Sheets. So Paul Evans was pitching coach, legend there, and then Jamie Sheets was like our, I forget what his title was when we were there, maybe like the grad assistant. But then Sheets was back there working, and it was a year after the Rockies, and he started working with me daily. And so, like, I didn't feel the same, but we got the velo back up. So the velo got back up to, like, 93, 95. And when I was with the Cardinals, and like, I had a really good start to that year. I never felt the same, but at least had some velo to work with again.
Yeah.
And and so I had I know a lot of appearances with them, and then I gave up 8 runs in my last 2/3 of an inning with them.
Oh, that sucks. Because, like, It's just, when you're a reliever, it just inflates everything so much. Like, I was telling, I think it was Zach LeBan this.
Yeah.
I was like, he's one of our pro guys here. I was like, I kind of like just don't take reliever numbers seriously until you get to about the 50 inning mark. Because, like, you have one bad outing, it just destroys everything. Yeah. So.
But, yeah, I don't even know how many. I don't know. Probably threw a decent amount, 20, 30 innings.
That was your double-A season with the Cardinals.
So, yeah, how many runs did I give up?
You gave up 20 runs and 8 of them came in your last year. So you probably had like a 3.2 ERA and then just skyrockets to 5.5 because it's like, how are you supposed to, you can't come back from that,
so,
basically.
Yeah, and I mean, and they released me right after after the game. So, but yeah, that's closest I probably got because I got my velo back. But I mean, it taught me a lot. And then from there, it was more learning how to pitch and started developing, you know, some secondary pitches. And then going to indie ball and being able to then come back and, you know, full circle and be a starter again. Because now I had a really good changeup at that point. I could spin a slider, could flip in a curveball.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, ended up starting and eating up a lot of innings and never got any more affiliated opportunities. But I mean, definitely helped me for where I'm at now and helped me have a lot of perspective on how to help people. And I mean, that's what, you know, got me started on it, was my constant perseverance to try to like figure out how the body was working and like why those changes affected me so much and how to try to get back to it. And so it was just this constant journey for myself, but it gave me a lot of knowledge, about the human body, a lot of knowledge about like sequencing and transferring of energy. And it's helped me pass that knowledge to others now.
So what do you think, if you could go back to that, what would that be? Right before you reported to High A when they were making those changes, like what would the advice have been to yourself?
It would have been hear what they're saying without listening and don't fix what's not broken. And it's tough because you never want to like tell a coach, like, no, screw you, I'm not doing that. Because then all of a sudden you're uncoachable or unwilling to work and change. But, like, you have to be able to be like, hey, this works for me. I'm going to keep doing this. We can find a way to improve that without having to change this. And, I mean, I see a lot. We talked to Riley about it. Like, you know, he gets to spring training, and he had 8 different coaches watching one of his bullpens telling him 8 completely different things to change. And it's like, how can an athlete, like, even pick which one to do and say yes to every single guy and then change all those things? And not, now we're all
right. Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's one thing, just like, I think the, on the coaching end, and maybe you can talk more about this, but it's just, I think the more and more, and I don't consider myself super experienced, but like the older I get into it, the more it's just like, especially with the really good players, like I was talking to one of your brother's clients that came and hit with me, Max at K-State, I was like, hey man, like just my advice to you is the better you get and the more talented you are, the more people are gonna want like quote unquote a piece of you. And so like the big thing I talked to those guys about, same thing with like Robbie, the guy that's on the Australian WBC team I've been working with, it's like, listen man, like we're gonna go over stuff, but like just say you don't like it because we'll figure something else out. And I think players kind of appreciate that. I don't know, like it's probably a better option than just like, do you want to play in the big leagues? Because like, because then you get, basically I think the messaging behind that is like, if you don't do it this way, you won't.
Cool.
And so then especially
when we're not gonna let you,
or we're not gonna let you. Yeah, exactly. Whereas like there's a college kid that I work with where, you know, he's like, hey, my coach, you know, told me we need to, you know, kind of be, they were getting beat up by 4-seam fastballs up. And he's like, he addressed the team, not the player individually. And he's a really good player. But he was like, he told me we needed to be more on top of the 4-seam fastball. And I was like, okay, how did you do? He's like, well, I got a hit and I barreled another ball. And I was like, okay. So what is your coach trying to say? He's like, well, he's saying that we were like underneath it, popping up, stuff like that. And he goes, but every time I think like get steeper, like down on the ball, I like kind of like pull off and I ground out to third and all this stuff. And I was like, all right, so like understand the problem. The solution he gave you is not work for you, and you already know that. So just understand like the issue that he's bringing up. The solution's not good for you, which is fine. And I sent him some like videos of Bregman because he talks a lot about that. And I think basically that coach was trying to tell you is like, hey, you're not, you can't only throw fastballs all the way to the big leagues. So, well, you know, which well, some guys yes, can, but.
Yes and no. Like, yeah. There were probably other ways to, I mean, I know there were other ways we yeah. could have addressed it.
Yeah. So I guess now, like, what would you have done now that you kind of like, what would you have done with yourself back then? Now that you're a coach, this is kind of what you do, or this is what you do as your profession, work with a lot of professional guys. What would you have done with yourself?
You know, this goes back to like our conversations about the instant feedback of technology. And I would work more with like extreme feels of like release of the ball or how the hand is coming off the ball than trying to like change something a guy does really well. You don't take a guy's best attribute and be like, because something else is weak, we're going to make your best attribute suffer to try to get that better. And so, yeah, I think like creating more extreme like hand positions or feels or pressures like would have really helped me. And I mean, once again, like it was a new coordinator that was there for 2 weeks. So it was like, I need to change something. Like, hey, you had a pretty good year. Let me change something with you. You know, like, and if it played out and like I didn't get screwed up and made the big leagues, then he could be like, yeah, see, I helped that guy get there.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes the issue at times with coaches too, is like you want to be, it's a dangerous place to be. I was listening to another podcast with a hitting coach that I like, and he runs a facility, and he was talking about how like when he was younger coaching teams, it was like, man, my team hit really well this year, I'm a great hitting coach. And then he would have another year where they hit bad, and he'd be like, okay, do I need to like change this? Like, am I good at my job? I've been there. Like, I've coached teams and you have like a great hitting year and you're like, oh yeah, it's like all this stuff, it's the way to do it. And then you do it the next year and they don't perform as well. And you're like, do I need to change? It's like, well, no, like there's a lot of factors. Like, how was the weather that year? We're in the Midwest. Was it freezing cold the entire time? Well, guess what? Pitching numbers would be awesome,
yep.
but hitting numbers would be terrible. Were your players worse the next year?
Yep.
Like, yep. that's a real so thing. Much. And so I think that's where I've talked to you about it, where it's just like, you have to be confident in what you're teaching and
you have to know what's, harm. Was my biggest thing.
Yeah. And so how is, I guess, your playing experience, you said it kind of like really helped you out. So what do you think the biggest takeaways were that you took from your own coaching or your own playing experience with the advice you got that has helped you out now?
I think like the ability to stay out of the way at times and not try to always find a problem. And sometimes there's not a problem. Sometimes a guy doesn't need to do something different. Sometimes he just needs to get his work in, or he needs to be, you know, talked to about, like, his thought process. Or, you know, there's not always an issue that you got to be like, oh, we got to change that. And I think too often guys are like, okay, well, we're here working on a specific craft. Like, okay, we need, like, overcoaching. And it's like, well, you don't always need to, like, say something about a guy's pitch or a throw or a body movement. Like, sometimes the body's going to figure it out. You got to let the body self-organize and know when to address and give the help and when to stay back and, like, let them figure it out.
So do you think, I stole this from one of my buddies that's he's a hitting coach in the Reds organization. He was just like, you know, good hitting coaches are external cues, so, like, hit the ball here and then, like, physical constraints. He's like, that's the best way to help guys make improvements, especially that are high-level athletes, because it's like, I don't know, you can't really cue a guy into a good swing. I'm sure it's the same on the mound. So, like, what are some of your just, like, I guess, philosophies with the pitching program? Like, how do you kind of execute some of those things where it's, like, self-organizing,
I mean,
like you're talking
freedom,
about?
Freedom, movement, and athleticism
yeah.
are, like, a couple of our key principles.
Yeah.
And so, like, how to move faster, like whether it's using a med ball or a baseball, like we do a lot more athletic drills, like, you know, a turn and burn or a double play or a step behind, like doing things where the body's having to gain athleticism and organize itself to throw, you know, a med ball harder or a baseball further.
Yeah.
Like to me, like those are some of the most helpful things guys can do, or those athleticism throws.
Yeah, because I think just outside looking in, I think a lot of times pitchers get turned into like robots.
Yes.
And where it's like, hey, get into this position, get into this position. Now fire from this position. It's like, I kind of look at it from like a swing perspective for like hitters. I usually look at like, do you have a problem at the beginning of your swing or your end? Because usually it's like guys don't load right or they don't finish well. and then people will like be like, well, their bat path is steep or it's kind of like uphill. It's like, well, that happens in like point whatever seconds. Like the odds of you helping a guy change that, like it's probably at the beginning or the end of their swing. And so like you can, I've just found very little success being like, hey, we're gonna like really focus on these things and do these like slow motion drills to like get their bat path right. It's like, well, the ball's at 95, like they can't think about that. So like, why don't we give them a different weighted bat or different weighted balls or like external cues of like, hey, like Caleb Marquez I'm working with, steeper bat path. So we just put the machine on the high legs, it's bearing down on him. And so if he's steep at it, it's just gonna go straight to the ground. Yeah. And so like his body will, nobody wants to see, nobody wants to see that. Like you don't want to hit 500 ground balls off the machine. So like after it's, you know, one round, it's like, okay, well now he's getting more on plane, balls are flying, hit home runs. Okay, now we're gonna move it around so you can do that. And I'm assuming it's pitching is the same thing. It's like, let's just be athletic and then everything in the middle will kind of like take care of itself. So, well, you got done playing in 2014. What year did you open Premier? Like when did you start doing all this? 2015?
Yep.
How long were you thinking about that before you?
I mean, I wasn't really.
Yeah.
Like I was actually, you know, I had applied and interviews for another job and then.
Baseball job or just normal job?
Then it kind of, one of my good buddies, Brian DeLunas, God rest his soul, I've alluded to in the past that, you know, we grew up doing a lot of stuff together and he was in St. Louis and he had a couple kids who were Riley and Joey that when I moved to Kansas City, Riley and Joey were driving to St. Louis weekly to work with Brian.
That's crazy.
And so when Brian found out I moved to Kansas City, he's like, hey, will you take like these two kids on for me? He's like, can you work with them? And you know, I was like, yeah. And like,
so they're pretty awesome two kids to start working
with. 100%. 100%. And there were a couple others. So I was given some lessons just to like kind of get by. And then, you know, Riley and Joey came on, and then organically, like, started building a lot.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. And then you've moved a few different facilities. Why don't you? Because I think a lot of people see, you know, all these different places and like how, you know, awesome they are. And I was talking to Trevor about this the other day. Like Ben Brewster for Tread Athletics, the first building they bought, I think I heard an interview where he said they just slept in the back because they couldn't afford rent and, you know, facility rent. So it was like, I have a choice. I can either have an apartment, have my first facility. And so people don't really, I think starting a business is like this cool, like, and I encourage people to do it, but I don't think you realize how, like, how much sacrifice you have to have. So like, talk about the first facility you worked out of.
Yeah,
and
I mean, so the first facility was this like single office in front with a warehouse that was 50 feet long and 20 feet wide.
So you couldn't even throw a bullpen.
Couldn't even go full distance for the mound. Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, at the time, a group of Riley Pine, Joey Wentz, Lucas Kroll, Tyler Benninghoff, Blake Lewis, like all these guys that got drafted, and they're all working in this 50-foot area and in a group setting.
Turns out, like, you can still get better.
Correct. And that's like, yeah, I mean, we do get very high maintenance now on like everything we need. But yeah, it was very minimal, and like we got after it, we had a good plan. And as soon as like we started growing a little bit, it was like, oh man, we need a bigger place.
Yeah.
And so yeah, then we upgraded to, I think it was like a 1,000 square foot building, which seemed monstrous. Like we opened it up and like we did all the turf ourselves, painted ourselves. Like it was a nightmare. Like after doing that, like I never advise doing that to anybody.
Just hire it out.
Just go into a little debt and do it. Like it's worth it.
But I do think it's interesting because like everybody sees all the, and it's a little, we're in a more affluent area, obviously. But I remember I was recruiting a couple Dominican kids and at the JUCO I was at, and the field they were on had like rocks, obviously this L screen that was massive health risk and no fence. And so I remember I got on the phone with them and English wasn't great, obviously, but I was like, hey, you know, I saw the field you're playing on, like, how do you hit a home run? And he goes, hit it into the trees. And I was like, okay. You know, I had a couple of kids from Jamaica and we went to this, you know, you play JUCO baseball or coach JUCO baseball, you get some really awesome facilities and then you get some where they're not. We went to a place where it was not and they're like complaining about it, you know, whatever. I remember that kid just looked at me and he goes, man, they should try playing baseball in a third world country. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. I just think, you know, you don't have to have all these things be super perfect. It's just about making the best of what you got. And obviously you had a 50 by 20 warehouse with what, probably had a radar gun. That's it?
No, I didn't even have a radar gun.
No yeah. radar gun. Just yeah. And you got 4 or 5 guys drafted out of that place. So I think that's the main thing where it's like, you want to go to these places like, oh, they got, you know, all this stuff, which it is helpful. I'm not saying it's not, but it's not the number one priority, I guess. Anyways, you go to your second facility, which I've never been to, but I've heard about it.
The second facility, it was pretty big. It was like 8,000 square feet, an industrial park. They hated us because we'd always, on nice days in the spring and summer, we'd always go out back because it's just this like, The parking lot was, you know, a quarter mile long.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we'd go out there and have 20 kids throw a long toss. And we'd always get yelled at for that. But it was big. Like, the lighting was terrible. Like, the building had to be built, you know, 70 years ago. And so we were in there for a couple years. And then we actually, like, took over the, you know, warehouse next to us, which was, like, another 5,000 square feet. And knocked the wall down and, like, it got bigger in there, and we had that for maybe 6 months before, like, just out of opportunity and luck, the place where now came available, and we moved here.
All right. And then I know we got to get out of here soon because we got kids about to show up, but I want to give you a couple questions before we end that are kind of, I guess, on the spot. But one is, if you're a player. So obviously we have a lot of younger, below college athletes in here primarily. What do you think the two biggest non-physical qualities are to reach whatever your ceiling may be? For some guys, it's Riley getting drafted in the fourth round, getting to the big leagues. Some guys, it may be making their high school team. So, like, what do you think the biggest qualities are?
I mean, I think the dedication and accountability. Mm-hmm. I think you see the guys that, like, want to be here, like, I'm not coming here because my dad wants me to come here. It's like, I'm coming here because I'm like, I think that's huge. And then I think, like, just the accountability. And when I say the accountability, I mean, like, in everything. Like, I mean, like, you walk by a piece of trash on the ground, like, pick it up. Don't just keep walking by it. Like, you use a plyo ball, put it back.
Away,
don't
yeah.
just throw it down on the ground. And I think you see the guys that, like, are accountable and, like, the details. They are way more serious and way more productive when they're actually, like, trying to perform.
Yeah, I think you can kind of sum that up. I've heard some people, it's the care factor. Like, how much do you care? Yeah. Like, if you're okay with your workspace being super, you know, dirty and messed up, then, like, it's kind of a little insight into, like, what you think of your own training. Like, it's probably kind of erratic. Yeah. I guess the second one would be, obviously you kind of hire a lot of coaches, whether they're players or you've had different, you know, strength conditioning companies like Trevor's in here now. And what are the qualities, I guess, you look for hiring people?
For me, the care, like, I mean, it goes back to it. Like, actually caring about the athletes. Like, if the coaches don't care, it doesn't matter your knowledge base. Like, you're not going to be able to relate to the kids. You're not going to be able to get them better, and no matter what level. Like, if you care and, like, you're working your ass off to help kids get better, like, the kids are going to respond to you way better, whether it's a big leaguer or an 8-year-old. Like, being caring and being attentive, I think it might be the same. Obviously, we want guys that are on, like, the same, like, thought process and ideology and principles. And but, like, if they've got a good knowledge base and, like, they care about the athletes and wanting them to actually get better and succeed and not just, like, yeah, I just want to make some money. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can be wrong.
And those things are pretty easy to sniff out. It's just like players. Like, you know the guys that play because they're good. And then you know the guys that play because they care. And I think a lot of people, like, you know, like Harper, right? He's a guy where, obviously, he went to Kentucky and, you know, he was a good recruit and stuff like that. But I would say his, like, progression is pretty, like, crazy. And a part of it is just because of how much he cares. You know what 100%. I mean? Like, you see guys like, you know, Joey and Riley, like, they have probably just more natural ability, but Harper's like worked so hard to get whatever his ceiling is he's going to get out of it. Yeah. You know, obviously had a great year in Double A last year. We're excited to see how he's going to do this upcoming season. But I think it's guys like that where it's like, you know, this guy was a, what was he, a 15th round pick, 16th round pick, something like that. Somewhere like towards the back end of the draft. And now it's like, man, this guy's in Double A and he's backing up big league games. Like, that's a crazy trajectory compared to a guy that's like, like, that's quick. And then I guess the last question, I think I texted you this the other day, like, what's the biggest thing you've learned from when you opened the facility to now? So it can be like a coaching thing, like, hey, I used to value this. I thought it was super important. It's not as much as I thought it was. It could be a business thing, like, hey, I thought this was important and it turns out it's just a waste of time. So anything
I mean, like, kind of yeah, I don't know, I guess. But I think the caring about the product and taking care of the product, and then the business will be fine if the product's what it should be.
Yeah.
And that goes back to, you know, just caring and making sure you're building relationships and helping kids get better and be productive and, you know, continue to progress and develop.
Yeah. And I think that's easier for, like, people in our age range just because, like, I know we talked about this earlier, but I think social media has really, like, done a disservice for a lot of kids now where it's like, you know, the whole, should I commit to Kentucky or Missouri State? It's like, yeah, it looks cool in Kentucky. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Or is it just like, hey, I'm just going to do it because it looks cool? And I think it's the same thing on the coaching end. It's like people want to pump up, like, oh, I work with these guys, and then they look like, oh, that guy's working with these people, and they're big-time clients, and yada, I know more than that. It's like, dude, you just got to do well with the people that are around you, and that kind of stuff is either going to work out or it's not, and that's kind of out of your control. And so I just think those are qualities that I see, like, in yourself and Trevor. Like, it's like, hey, the people that are here, those are the people we care about. Like, we don't need to worry about the other people that whatever place is posting about. Like, that doesn't really matter because they're not, like, in our umbrella. Like, we need to care about the people that are here.
Correct.
And so, but yeah. But, Bob, it was great. It was great having you on. And it was cool hearing about your playing career and just kind of how that's impacted your kind of like your philosophy and your business and stuff like that. And I know we're getting close here and we got to go out and I guess do our job now.
Yeah,
you know,
got to
go work now. But it was awesome hearing about all that. I appreciate you giving all of us in this facility an opportunity, whether it's athletes or coaches. And it's been a lot of fun this past year and a half. And like we talked about the other day, we're just going to keep it rolling.
Yeah, and then hopefully next week we get spring training updates and college baseball updates.
That's right.
They are in full swing.
Yep. Whoever's listening, we'd appreciate you subscribing. Follow us. Send us to friends and family. Leave a comment. We'll talk to you next week.